Are you ready? Okay, I'll go ahead and call to order for our regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting Tuesday, April 12th, if the audience will join the Board of the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. Public comment number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. See anybody move to the mic? Justin, you want to do the resolution first?
Sure.
Okay. The consideration of proclamation declaring the week of April 10th through the 16th as Crime Victim Rights Week. Jess Reynolds, Assistant County Attorney. Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you to the Board of Supervisors for allowing us to speak today regarding a really important issue, which is Crime Victims' Rights Week. And our office has presented a proclamation for the Board's consideration and approval. And I'll just jump into it if that sounds all right.
Sure.
Whereas Americans are the victims of more than 20 million crimes each year, and crime can touch the lives of anyone regardless of age, national origin, race, creed, religion, gender, sexual orientation, immigration, or economic status. Whereas many victims face challenges in finding appropriate services, including victims with disabilities, young victims of color, deaf and hard of hearing victims, LGBTQ victims, tribal victims, elder victims, victims with mental illness, immigrant victims, teen victims, victims with limited English proficiency, and others. Whereas too many communities feel disconnected from the justice and social response systems and have lost trust in the ability of those systems to recognize them and respond to their needs. Whereas victims of repeat victimization who fail to receive supportive services are at greater risk for long-term consequences of crime. Whereas the victim services community has worked for decades to create an environment for victims that is safe, supportive, and effective. Whereas intervening early with services that support and empower victims provides a pathway to recovery from crime and abuse. Whereas honoring the rights of victims, including the right to be heard and be treated with fairness, dignity, and respect, and working to meet their needs, rebuild their trust in the criminal justice and social service systems. Whereas serving victims and rebuilding their trust restores hope to victims and survivors, as well as their communities. Whereas National Crime Victims' Rights Week, April 10th through 16th, 2016, is an opportune time to commit to ensuring that all victims of crime, even those who are challenging to reach or serve, are offered accessible and appropriate services in the aftermath of crime. And whereas Story County, Iowa is hereby dedicated to serving victims, building trust, and restoring hope for justice and healing. Now, therefore, we, the Story County Board of Supervisors, do hereby proclaim the week of April 10th through 16th as Crime Victims' Rights Week, and reaffirm this county's commitment to creating a victim service and criminal justice response that assists all victims of crime during Crime Victims' Rights Week and throughout the year, and to express our sincere gratitude and appreciation to those community members, victim service providers, and criminal justice professionals who are committed to improving our response to all victims of crime so that they may find relevant assistance, support, justice, and peace.
Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you. That's the first comment I would like to make is that there's always a difference between something when you get a bunch of lawyers together trying to come up with some words to a proclamation or any document is usually one of the longest ones you will see. So I'm glad that you didn't disappoint us. Acknowledge and accept the proclamation declaring the week of April 10th, 16th, Crime Victim Rights Week.
And I'll second, and Jess, a question for you. I know that a year or so ago, maybe it's been longer than a year, you reorganized your victim witness services within the county attorney's office.
I think, to more closely connect the attorneys with the services. Can you tell, give us an update on how that's going?
Absolutely, yeah. That was an innovative thing that our office decided to do, where we switched our victim witness program. And what we've done is we've taken out that middleman layperson that's in between the victim and the prosecuting attorney. And what that's done is it has forced the prosecutor to engage with those victims, to get to know them, to make sure that they are meeting their needs as are statutorily provided by the code. And it's made us a better office. It's made us more sensitive to crime victim rights. And it's really made all of us grow as people and as attorneys.
I'll say it next.
We have a motion and a second to proclaim the week of April 10th to the 16th is Crime Victim Recognition Week. Is there anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Let it be proclaimed. Jessica, while you're sitting there, we've also got a recognition of Crime Victims Rights Week Award of Recognition to Mr. Devlin A. Lockman. And if you would call Mr. Lockman up to the desk right next to you, we'll get started.
I will do so, Devlin, if you would come up here. And I'm also going to ask that representatives from the Ames Police Department join us, because they've been such an important part of this case and of Devlin's experience. I didn't tell them that, so I appreciate their cooperation.
Yeah. These guys look like they're here to collect a debt.
Ellen, I think you're well protected right now.
Well, just to introduce myself formally for the record, I'm Jessica Reynolds, and I'm the first assistant in the Surrey County Attorney's Office. And I'm here today with the Ames Police Department to honor someone really impressive and important to all of us. And the reason that we're here is because this is National Crime Victims Rights Week. And the purpose of National Crime Victims Rights Week is to raise awareness about crime victims' rights and show how serving victims and building trust restores hope and strengthens communities. And it's in that spirit that the Surrey County Attorney's Office has partnered with the Surrey County Board of Supervisors to award the first Crime Victims Rights Week Award of Recognition. And I can't think of anyone more deserving than Devlin A. Lockman. Right now, Devlin is 15 years old, and I met Devlin in an unfortunate circumstance because on December 20th, 2013, Devlin's father was killed by Lila Pond. Lila Pond shot him. And at the time, the victim, who his name is Devlin L. Lockman. So this is Devlin A. Lockman, and his dad is Devlin L. Lockman. And he was named for his dad. And Devlin L. Lockman was 38 years old at the time of his murder, and he left behind four children. And the oldest of his children is Devlin A. Lockman, seated by me. At the time, Devlin was 13 years old, and it's unimaginable to think of what he went through as he lost his dad at such an important age. I was one of the prosecutors on the murder case, along with Tim Meals, and Mr. Meals is really sorry that he can't be here today. He met with Devlin before we came over here this morning. And at the time of sentencing in the murder case, I sat in the courtroom while you, Devlin, got up in front of everyone in open court and told everyone what the loss of your dad did to you. And you did it right in front of the person that murdered your dad. And you had so much courage and strength. And it was really an inspiration to every single person that was in that courtroom. And the judge even commented on your strength and your perseverance and was really impressed by you. I know that in our line of work, we deal with victims that encounter various degrees of loss. And some crime victims experience loss of property. Some crime victims experience loss of their sense of security or safety. They experience loss of relationships when spouses or friends or significant others commit criminal acts on them, and you know, the very people that are supposed to protect them.
And Devlin, in your case, you've experienced the most profound type of loss because you've experienced the irreversible type of loss. You've had a parent that was taken from you by a criminal act. And I know we all see in our line of work people who choose to deal with those types of loss in different ways. And you've chosen the path of having courage, of speaking out, of stepping forward, and of being a ray of light in a really dark time. And I just wanted to publicly acknowledge you and tell you that you inspire me, you inspire all of us. And unfortunately, I never got to meet your dad when he was alive. I wish I would have. But when I prosecuted the case, I spent a lot of time researching, learning a lot about him and his life. And I can tell you for sure that he would be so proud of you today. And I can tell you that we're all proud of you today and always. And you have a community of people around you that are in your corner and always there for you. And so it's with great pleasure and pride that our office, along with the Story County Board of Supervisors, awards you the first Story County Crime Victims' Rights Award of Recognition. Congratulations.
I'm
going to
put you on the spot, Ellen,
and
give you the opportunity if you have anything you'd like to say. You don't have to.
I already told him he didn't have to.
I get everybody in front, all of us here, in front of the desk, will present the... right Devlin, you come up here with us.
Right on here.
Come on.
Follow
me.
I'll stand in the back.
There you go. How's that look?
Are you okay? Good.
How
is
it?
It's good.
Agency report, Heartland Senior Services annual report, Nancy Carroll.
Nancy, you got your work cut out for you following that.
Really. Very touching. I'm glad I got to be here to see that and hear that. Well, thank you for having me. I am representing Heartland Senior Services of Story County. I became their executive director officially January 1, and I'm very pleased to do that. I always had a passion to serve just personally older adults. And we're looking to make some changes at Heartland that I've tried to capture in the executive summary that I provided you today. And I think the biggest emphasis is for you folks to understand just the big picture of Heartland Senior Services. And when I talk about trying to make some changes, it basically relates to just the change in society, that the baby boomers are here. They started officially, I think, in 2011, retiring in mass numbers, at about 10,000 people a day in America. So it's going to have a staggering impact on all of America of how we're going to really proactively serve older adults. So I wanted to try to capture a little bit of that for you today. But the big picture is we've appreciated over the years your county-wide support. As you know, we are a county-wide agency, so 15 communities. But I tried to break it down in the summation at the very top of what our funding streams are, and when we're looking at roughly a $1 million budget, and how we generate the revenue to offset that. And of course, Story County provides roughly $86,000 a year, and we're appreciative of that. And I know the residents that we serve through your funding are obviously very appreciative also. just to give you the big picture, there's an attachment that I tried to break it out by the programs. But big picture, we roughly serve in the 14 counties, excluding Ames, a roughly unduplicated residents, 687, and these are actuals from 14, 15. The activities that we do, or the programs that we offer of activities that we'll start with, it's a variety of things from, you know, chorus, things they can participate in, jazz, jams, bingo, exercise, those types of activities. But I think the important thing in activities, as I just mentioned, is the baby boomers. There's going to be different expectations of what I think, and I'm a baby boomer, of what our expectations are compared to maybe what our parents is currently. So with that being said, we started conversations with some major players in the community, including Story County, you having representation through Deb, but also Iowa State University, Mary Greeley Medical Center, School District, City of Ames, and Heartland. And they're just conversations at this point. There's nothing that's been decided, and they're discussionary for the reason, though, of what I talked about. How do you start to look at a new day, maybe more preventative health care approach than reactive that society has known for many decades? And we're talking in the terms of a healthy life center, not a recreation center, not a community center, but more focused on well-being of people that would start with nutrition counseling and education, as well as well-being in its totality. Of course, it would have to include some active spaces, too, because, of course, physically it is important to stay active and physically and mentally active, too. So that's just, again, discussion. I think these discussions are going to continue for another, you know, few months before they would be at the level of bringing it forward to the official boards of your level and city council and the powers that be. But at least it's good to have discussion. We appreciate your leadership and support in sending Deb to these conversations. And if you have any questions or comments, I'll sure field those when I finish my report. Adult Day Center is another program we have that's very important. Anymore, dementia is starting to become just a very big issue within society. I think we all can say we know someone maybe personally that's been affected within their household that has dementia. And our Adult Day Center is probably one of the best kept secrets in Story County. And we're going to try to even ramp up more in the days and months ahead to make sure people understand what Adult Day Center is. It's a licensed unit. We can accommodate up to 30 people today. And currently, about 90% on average have dementia. That's who we're serving. And the important thing is twofold. It's not just for the person that's coming there to be having a good day and be active and still being challenged as their abilities allow, but also for the caregivers. Many times the caregivers that we have that are dropping the folks off at the day center still can maintain their employment and their mental well-being. And if the day center doesn't exist, as we all understand, it can be almost as damaging and life-controlling to the caregiver than it is to the person that's actually suffering with dementia. So it's a very critical service. And our director is saying that over the next 10 to 15, 20 years, it'll probably double and then triple in the amount of people that are going to need these kind of services because of the increase in dementia in society. Nutrition is an important program. We're currently having conversations with Mary Greeley Medical Center if there's a way that we could have Mary Greeley produce roughly our 150 meals a day, because Mary Greeley produces for the entire hospital roughly 1,500 meals a day. Of those 1,500, they carve out roughly 60 for their Meals on Wheels program. So the conversation currently is, does it make sense that maybe Heartland would take over the role of coordinating the volunteers to deliver the Meals on Wheels in Ames that they do, continuing with, of course, our geography borders, which is Story County, not Ames, and it would all come be one program, and they would make the meals, and we would deliver them. So those conversations are just currently unfolding. But again, I would hope within the next couple months we will have some resolve to those discussions. And then lastly is outreach. Outreach is a very important program because the goal, I think, of all of us in Story County is to try to let people age well at home. And yet that can look like a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And with an aging population, again, Mary Greeley Medical Center has seen that it adds value to them also. If outreach can be some of the first people in once someone's maybe gotten dismissed from the hospital. Do you need access to a warm meal until your rehab? Do you have a way to get back to your first doctor's visit? Can you get your prescriptions filled? You know, in some of these small rural counties, they don't have pharmacies like we do down the block in Ames. So we have to be sensitive to that. And so Mary Greeley is starting just this current year. They're starting to infuse over a three-year commitment that we could hire an additional part-time person, $30,000 a year. And I share that because I think it's important that Heartland is starting to be seen as a value proposition, not just another great nonprofit organization. And we're taking that responsibility to heart, because if we can really get focused with outreach, if we can do a better job of supporting people to connect them to existing Story County resources, keep them at home longer, it's number one, best for their life, their families, and caregivers' lives, as well as it's a great way to also reduce healthcare costs, big picture, because it's way cheaper to be at home than it is to start to have someone be in a 24/7 care facility, as we, I think, all understand. I've never done this before, so I wanted to move through it kind of quickly, but those are my comments. I know you have my written report before you, but if there's any comments, any encouragement you can give me of things you'd like to see differently at Heartland, you probably know it well from Liz coming many years in a row to do this annual report. I'm sure all ears, but I do want to conclude with I'll answer any questions, and I want to express our appreciation for your ongoing support, because we need it. Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy.
I'm really, really glad you're here. I am so appreciative. So clearly, we've known for years that the financial model that Heartland is operating on under is tough to be sustained. And I really appreciate that you hit, I think, the nail on the head in saying the very model that Heartland uses better be looked at, because it's different for those in their 70s and 80s than what those of us in our 50s and 60s are going to expect when we get there. So I'm excited about the conversations you're having with the Well-Being Center, or whatever you're referring to it as. I want to know, as we look at the financial model going forward, clearly the facility is not suitable, even in the model you have now, and definitely ongoing. But are you finding that this is sustainable with some of the partnerships you're building, or are we still way behind the eight ball financially?
What do you mean sustainable? If we go to this Healthy Life Center,
I'm not even thinking of the Healthy Life Center. That's a whole other thing. I'm saying just the service you provide. I like the idea of more close partnership with Greeley, things like that.
Yeah, no, it's a great question, Rick. And is this sustainable long term? That is why we're trying right now, and over the next year or two, to really, really delve into it. Because it either is going to be sustainable because we're going to make some of these shifts. Otherwise, I don't think it is. Meaning, you can't keep doing meals and losing $60,000 a year. And you can go out and try to fundraise, but everyone's time to discover for everybody. So when you can start to collaborate, and you can take out again some of the, but everyone's meant well, so there's no judgment looking back. We're looking forward of the inefficiencies, then I think that's what we got to do. And so that's the meal piece. But if you can cut $60,000 out, wow, that's really good right off the bat. But second to that, also seeing us as a value proposition, national health care laws now are changing so dramatically that the hospitals are seeing the ramifications financially if people get, after being discharged, readmitted within a certain defined amount of time. Heartland now again can come in and again, I believe, start receiving funding like we're currently doing from Mary Greeley within the county, perhaps, because again, they're going to save money if they utilize our services.
Sure.
And we're the most economical one that can be the first one in the door as the patient's situation allows. Okay, because we're not, you know, we have to make sure we're defined and focused in that regard. But so I think that's why we can be sustainable long term, because I think national health care laws and the mass of people that are coming up into the system now with baby boomers, Heartland's really going to be needed in a way that we have not been. But we do have to be attentive to the financial. I want to make sure I'm very clear, though. We always know there are frail and faceless people in this county and that cannot afford any type of level of service. And that's where we all collectively, and the funders, the assets, Asset Ames, you guys, We still have to be there for the frail and the faceless. But the ones that don't, where can we be more efficient, effective, collaborate to the max, and really try to be sustainable long term? But it's a journey for every nonprofit. We, you all know that first and foremost. But I'm here to be committed to seeing what can we do to make sure we are.
Absolutely. And I believe I speak for this board when I say anything we can do to assist in the collaboration fully on board. I think there's full recognition of what Heartland means for the community of Story County. And I've been frustrated over the last few years that I could not find a sustainable path forward. And I think what I've seen from you today is my first inkling that, yes, there is that sustainable path forward. It's going to take a lot of hard work and a lot of collaboration. But I'd like to help with that.
Well, you already are by, again, having Deb join our conversations, and your funding stream continues to demonstrate that. So thank you. The jury's still out yet, just like this for everybody financially. But, again, we're committed, and I think we do have a little bit of a roadmap in front of us that we're going to try to really get after the next several months and years.
Well, I'll just say this. I think Heartland made a great choice when they brought Liz back in when they did. Some really tough decisions that she made in her, 4 or 5 or 6 year tenure. And I think Heartland has done it again in tapping Nancy to run through this part of the process. We're glad you're here.
Well, it's mutual, and I really appreciate those comments, and thank you for having me. And we again appreciate your support.
Thanks. Thanks.
And I can't add much more to that, but I will say that, Rick, we go back well over 40 plus years. When I first moved into my current residence, our property lines connected. Mm-hmm. Her and her brother, I remember them growing up over the years and shooting baskets in their driveway and so forth, and so forth, and followed her through directing me, Parks and Rec, and now in the leadership of Heartland, I know they are positioned to do great things in the community. And I happen to be one of those that are reaching that era in my life where some of those kinds of services will have even more special meaning.
Yeah, that's
thank
right.
You for your leadership and what your vision, and all of us together, I'm sure, will be able to help chart the course for those that will need the service in the years to come.
It's a new day. So thank you very much, Wayne, for those comments, and Paul for having me. Thank you, Rick.
Next is consideration minutes from April 5th.
Yeah, I'll move approval.
Second.
Motion to second. Any additions or corrections? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Duke. Aye. Consideration personnel actions.
Approval.
Second.
Have a motion to second. Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Duke. Aye. Consent agenda. Gentlemen, add utility permit 1657.
1657. Move approval with no changes.
Second.
Have a motion to second to approve the consent agenda. Is there anything further? Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Aye. That's been approved. That takes us to additional items. Review and consideration of additional private placement proposal for the general obligation bond refinancing. Lucy Martin, auditor.
Yep, thank you.
There was one in the packet, too.
Mm-hmm.
Morning.
Hello, sir.
Just last week, you did consider some private placements and decided to go with conventional bond placement. So, not to redo all of last week, but there was an additional offer of private placement that I wanted you to have to consider. This doesn't change our timeline. Right now, we're moving under the conventional market assumption, but just so you have full information, this one is not a local bank. I know that was one of the things that we looked at in local placement. It is Zion Bank out of Salt Lake City. What they're offering was better than we got from our response from local banks. It's still approximately $6,600 less of a savings than we would get on our estimate going to conventional market, so about $2,200 a year to the county, less in savings. So I just wanted to make sure that you had all of our offers of private placement before we, and again, we're operating under the assumption that we're moving towards the conventional market, but just throwing it out here for your consideration.
Yeah, I want to make sure I'm reading it all right, Lucy. Okay. So if you can, so I think you correctly note that when we talked about a private placement, we wanted to do it with a local bank.
Right.
I believe we gave every local bank the opportunity and didn't find a rate that was suitable.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem to be the appetite there for this type of fund in our local bank. So.
But this bank out of Salt Lake City is offering 1.2% interest.
Right.
The effective rate of 1.93 by the time we got all the fees in.
Right. Yeah.
And we expect if we go conventional, we could get as low as 1.78, but there's some gamble there, right?
Right. I mean, this is a known quantity. Everything else is based on, you know, assumptions on the current market rates right, you know, today. So.
Yeah, so I'll tell you where I am, guys. For $6,600, maybe $6,600, I don't think we're going to do any better than the all-in of 1.78 by the time you include fees. Now I start to come down more bird in hand. We know we got this 1.2% interest rate, 1.93% by the time you include fees and everything. We don't have to go through any additional rating.
Right. We avoid that administrative process on our end.
Yeah, we don't have to gamble on interest rates staying down and the bond market staying as strong as it is. And for that reason, I would encourage us to strongly consider going with this private placement at 1.2%. Even though it's an house that we gave local banks an opportunity at this, nobody could do it. Our responsibility is to the taxpayers of Story County, and I think we meet that by going ahead and having this done at 1.93 all in.
I think it was, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we didn't hear back from most of the banks that we contacted. The ones we did hear back from, they were more interested in ag lending. The ag market.
Yeah, it's just not there.
Correct.
And
Rick,
right now.
Rick said a lot when he said it's a bird in the hand. We've got a known here at 1.2 from the bank in Utah, and we don't know what we'd have if we went to the open market.
Yep. Well, Lucy, you're our auditor. You see any flaws in that line of thinking?
No, I mean, that's why I brought it to you. I thought, you know, it's worth considering. I know we did talk about going to the conventional market, but this changes. So
at that point, though, if I recall, we were talking more about $35,000-$40,000, and I thought there was room in that.
Right.
When you get down to $6,600 on a $2.4 million,
yeah, there was really no comparison with the ones that we had last week.
Right.
This is a lot closer.
Right. I'm going to move that we go ahead with the private placement with Zion Bank.
Bank in Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. Is that a motion?
That was a motion.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second to accept the offer from Zion Bank in Salt Lake City for the refinance original obligation bonds.
And just one comment, so I believe that this still will represent savings to the people of Story County somewhere
right.
in the neighborhood of $70,000.
$73,000.
$73,000 over maintaining the financing.
Right. If we did nothing, yeah, we wouldn't get that. So the $73,000 versus about $80,000 estimated going.
Or zero if we just leave it alone.
Yeah.
No savings if
correct.
We just leave it alone and pay for this. So I think saving $70,000 is pretty good.
So is this based on any type of timetable? So assuming you're proving today,
the timeline that was presented at earlier meetings is still in effect. It doesn't change that whether we go private or conventional. So we'll have Piper Jaffray come back, and it should wrap up. I don't think we have a meeting then. Under private scheme, we won't be before the board again until April 26th.
Okay.
So that will be our next meeting.
Thanks, Lucy.
Okay. All right. I'll call the question. We've had our motion and second in our discussion. Mr. Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Thanks, Lizzie.
All right. Thank you.
Consideration of resolution 1653 to vacate portion of 720th Avenue and hereby quit claim unto the adjoining property owners, Aaron Boone, County Engineer.
Morning, Darren.
Good morning. Yeah, we held a hearing on this at last week's board meeting, and I have received no comments since then, so the only thing really left for the board to approve the resolution, and that 1 mile stretch of 720th will be vacated.
I would move resolution 1653, which vacates a portion of 720th Avenue.
Second. We have a motion and a second to approve resolution 1653. Is there anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. That's been approved. Thanks, Darren. Next, consideration of resolution 1655 for the DNR Furman voluntary annexation located at 5871 Ontario Street for a total of 34.25 acres. Jerry Moore, Planning and Development. Morning, Jerry.
Good morning. Hi, Jerry.
Okay, again, as you said, it's the DNR Furman voluntary annexation. This property is on the west side of the city of Ames. It's also very close to the Story County, Boone County corporate limits. It contains 33.72 acres, and it is contiguous to the city of Ames corporate boundary. It's located at 5871 Ontario Street, and it's zoned A1 Agricultural District. Property is located in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. It's identified as an urban service area, urban residential on the land use framework map. Again, this request is a voluntary annexation. It is consistent with the policy in the plan. Urban service areas are planned to be annexed and developed inside the city of Ames, which is the plan. After annexation and rezoning, DNR Furman is proposing a 70 to 80 single-family dwelling development. They're proposing to phase the development from the eastern limit of the parcel to the west. This particular property is just west of Brookview Place West, plats 1 through 3. And the city is proposing to extend sanitary sewer, water, and extend the roads westerly from that existing development.
This development is on Ontario beyond...
As far west as you can go, between Ontario and the railroad tracks.
Yeah, I've got some
railroad tracks. Okay,
so I've got some aerials and some things.
It doesn't get all the way out the County Line Road, but it gets close.
Of course, it's very close.
Got vacant ground there just to the north of Ontario, so they've got the subdivision that they built 6 or 8 years ago there on Ontario on the north side.
This is from the city of Ames.
Yeah.
Just west of that existing development. It's on the north side of the road.
Okay, gotcha.
The City of Ames Planning and Zoning Commission did review this request April 5 at their meeting and approved it unanimously, 5-0. And their intention is to take it to the City Council April 26. This is from the Ames Urban Fringe Plan Land Use Class Map. Again, we're just south of the railroad, east of North 500th Avenue. It's on the north side of Ontario Street. And again, it's in the urban service area, urban residential, which means it's prime for annexation. Here's the 2015 aerial. This time the property is outlined in yellow. Again, we're on the north side of Ontario, west of the existing residential development, Brookview Place West. There is an existing single-family dwelling with a few outbuildings in the southwest corner or portion of that parcel. Currently, it's in agricultural row crops. This is a concept drawing. We did ask the developer if we could show the board this morning what is being proposed. Again, what's before you is a request to annex the property voluntarily. This has been an added bonus Again, we did request them to provide this to us to, for us to show you. They're proposing, as you can see, to extend the existing roads westerly. Again, it's in the neighborhood of 70 to 80 single-family residential lots. They're proposing like two outlots, one in the western portion of the parcel and then one in that southeast portion.
What's the one in the southeast portion?
It's for stormwater drainage.
Okay.
And part of this development is going to take on some of the stormwater from the east.
Okay. It's kind of hilly right there, isn't it? That corner of the lot, I think, drops off.
Yeah, there's a slight increase from the road up to about the south central portion, and then it somewhat flattens off.
And then it butts up against what's Clear Creek right there, isn't it? And so I appreciate that they're putting a buffer between the lots and the creek.
Right. But keep in mind, this is conceptual. It could, the layout and configuration could change. Site photos. I just took a few site photos. This is looking east on Ontario from the actual entrance into the property. This is near the High Point, looking southeast towards Ontario Street again. Looking east towards Brookview Place West development. This is looking north. You can kind of see how it flattens out as you go northward. It's looking to the southwest again, where that residence and dwelling accessory buildings are. And then looking south back towards Ontario Street. And this is down by the access and the driveway. That's all I have for you. I'd be happy to answer your questions.
I move approval of 1655.
Second.
There's a motion and a second to approve resolution 1655 for the voluntary annexation of the Furman property. Anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. That's been approved.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you.
Discussion and consideration of reevaluation of positions within community service. Carl Webb and Melissa Whitnall. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Good morning.
Carl, we're glad you're back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
How's your endurance?
Good. It's pretty good. I'm a little surprised. Yeah, things are good. What we have brought to you today is a reevaluation of an existing position within our office. And this is in response to a request from the board last fall in relation to Veterans Affairs and incorporating those duties within a current staff member's job description within our office. So I worked with Alyssa Wignall, and what we've done is reevaluated the assistant director position within our office. A lot of the duties within that job description are maintained, and we incorporated the duties with Veterans Affairs into that job description. And we're proposing a different title of Community Services Program Director.
Yep. One thing I do want to remind the board is that there are some changes that are coming for the Community Services Department. So if you compare the two job descriptions, all it did was change the program that this position would be overseeing. Supervisory would still stay the same with, you know, might be supervising different individuals. We had a previous position within the department that was an intake coordinator, so we did look at that, too, to see if there was anything we were missing in the current job descriptions, that since we don't have that position anymore, and it kind of encompassed everything into this one position. And I think it clearly meets the goal of providing those VA, the CVSO officer duties, or that this person will be certified so that they can help with federal claims in the Veterans Affairs Department.
And as we reevaluate the position, any change in grade?
No.
Okay.
No, the duties and the complexity of the job all stays the same. The requirements are all there. We just added that to perform those intake duties for that. The position already did that, in essence, for general assistance.
So we just
needed to kind of change the verbiage in the job description. Everything else is pretty much the same.
The challenge that I see, the big cost differential, will be the main thing. Title one, assistant director versus community service project
program coordinator.
development, you know, is a little bit longer. And so
it is longer.
We just flip it over and put the new one on the back.
We still have this position filling in the absence of the director for that department. It's a large enough department that we needed that. Still included. So.
Okay. I move approval of the reevaluation of the position.
Second.
Got a motion and a second to approve the reevaluation of the position in community services. Is there anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Two. Aye. That's been approved. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Other reports, quarterly financial report update, Lisa Marsley. Perfect
timing.
It's like
40 to 11.
Blame it on the chair. You're making up for last week.
Making up for last week. You have in front of you the quarterly financial report as of March 31st of 16, 75% of the year. In the expenditure department, there are only five departments that are at least over 75% right now. So that's good. Overall, we're at 59% of our expenditures. So.
And we're under 75% in every one of our funds as well.
Yes, and we are none of them are over 75% out of the funds either. That was going to be my next comment. Did you read my mind?
Revenues,
right? 11 departments are over 75%, which is, I like that positive. That positive, and we're at 86.6% of our overall revenues. So I will be, as a side note, bringing to you a amendment for the year in late April for a public hearing in May. I haven't set my dates officially yet, but I'm working on it. I've put some emails out to departments asking for their information, their input. So that'll be coming to you soon.
Anytime expenditures are under budget and revenues are over budget, that's a good thing. Are we considering something here?
No. And I'm going to, I will be looking at revenues like I always do when I do a budget amendment.
Absolutely, so just like we did last year.
Right. I'm going to want to bring the revenues closer to where they're actually going to be, just like I did last year.
Yep.
And that's an FYI for you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Public forum number two, comments from the public on items not on this agenda. The board may not take any actions on the comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but may do so in the future. Crickets. Liaison assignments and committee meeting update.
Yes, yesterday I had the pleasure of getting Carl and she's back and so on and so forth. And we primarily just had a brief meeting, but updated a little bit about the Regional Governance Board and some of the things that's going to change come before us at a later date. One has to do with an RFP for the Transitional Living Center, similar to what Optimae is currently doing now with the duplex, looking to expand that to some of the other counties and trying to decide what's going to be the best fit. So we'll hear more about that at a later date. And another topic had to deal with the marketing entity, the crisis line, and contract for the website development, feeling that currently the current website is very difficult to navigate and have the necessary exposure that we need. And so the marketing entity has a lot to do with the branding aspect, and we'll hear more about that. And then she will be continuing to work on the FY17 contracting as we move forward. And also we discussed the new employee that's there in the office and how the transition with Veterans Affairs was going and so forth. Felt very good about that. And we talked about another entity that's at least on our radar that will be yet to be determined what's going to basically happen. And I imagine that several of our departments have been involved with that. Paul, I'm sure you're very aware, but some discussion about the Crestview mobile home situation and what the future prospects may hold there. So that was just part of our discussion. So
outstanding.
And then
I don't know if you want me to mention about the Conservation Board also at this time.
You're right.
Okay. Last evening, the Conservation Board met, and as you know, I attended that, and again, outstanding meeting. Just a couple key things there was some contracts between the Iowa Department of Natural Resources and the Conservation Board in a sponsorship of the Skunk River Water Trail and their role and involvement in signage and so forth. And this is going to be another way to enhance Story County and our, you know, trails and things of this nature. There was approval of the compensation policy and performance management policy that we had adopted, and the ongoing communication with Alyssa, our HR, and Mike Cost, Executive Director. The Conservation Board did approve the policies that had been talked about. And then we talked about the outreach volunteer program. Tomorrow night, for example, I believe there is a group of volunteers that are meeting at the Conservation Center. We have one of the largest turnouts, pre-registration of almost about 90 some odd people to recognize the outstanding volunteerism for Story County Conservation. So looking forward to that. And there was also a discussion about the ongoing communication and discussion with the Research Park, several of the members had gone through and walked through the trail, and they had a request RFP out, and they're looking to contract with someone. But that will all be determined based on what we do with our end and looking at the funding mechanisms and how all of that will come into play. And so all in all, it was just an excellent meeting, and just continue to be extremely proud of the ongoing efforts and outreach that our Conservation Department is making throughout Story County.
Well, Stan, thanks, Wayne. I've got three quick ones. Kelly Shedd, Deb and I continue to work on moving that ahead. I do not expect that we're going to get that completed nor those funds expended in FY16, but we continue to move ahead. Everything is looking good with Iowa State. Deb has prepared a bid packet to go out to local construction companies, and we're trying to finalize all that and get it out. Animal Control Building, we continue to move ahead with purchasing that building, and I do believe we're going to get that done yet in FY16, and it's just between us and the owner of the building right now working on some contract language. The final thing for you guys to be aware of is I found out Friday that DHS will not have funding next year for a pilot program that we had here in Story County over the last 2 years, mental health, school-based mental health services. Like I said, $100,000 contract that we have with LSI. I'm really, really disappointed that we find out here in the middle of April that as of July 1st and really in the summer when those kids don't have as much access, we're going to be losing this program. I'm trying to pull together a group rapidly that would include City of Ames, us, schools, six of the seven school systems in Story County utilize this. 22 of our schools utilize this program. Pull together the school systems, even United Way, bring them in. DHS has indicated that they do have some portion of the funding, just not the full $100,000 to get us through the next school year. And so you can expect there to be some kind of conversation that ultimately I would hope will end up in front of this board sooner rather than later.
Thanks for your work on those purchases you're working on. Buildings, animal control, and the shed.
Announcements, Mr. Brader. Wayne.
I was just trying to get the exact date, but the housing committee is planning to meet. I think a date has been set for our first meeting as we
talk about affordable housing concept and looking at the financing through the as we move forward. So I will be sitting in on that group, and then I'll update you a little bit later as to what we find out. But other than that, next week the Iowa State Association of Counties will be having its Smart Connection Conference. We have a large turnout. This will give an opportunity for the IT and county supervisors and others to interface with looking at technology needs and innovations that need to take place. So I plan to attend that, and I understand that a couple of members of our IT department will also be attending that conference in West Des Moines. And then, of course, on the following Friday, on the 29th, the ISAC Board of Directors meeting that I will be attending at that time. So,
pass.
I just take a second to recognize that we have all three of our official
board. Yeah, we're outnumbered. We're damn near outnumbered.
Scott Chamberino Berg and Laura Solson. Glad to see all three of you here.
And one other thing I forgot to say.
Oh, okay.
I want to especially acknowledge Leanne Harder and thank her. As you know, just last Friday I had the pleasure of speaking to the Ballard students as part of their career day. Leanne was gracious enough to help me pull together a PowerPoint presentation about Tri-County matters and some of the things and duties and responsibilities that the Board of Supervisors does. It really went over extremely well, and I can't thank her enough for that. And I made special reference about some of the changes that we have now with her position and with Elizabeth's position and Deb's position, and how that is providing additional communication and opportunities for us to expand what we do for the greater benefit of all Story County. So, Leanne, I just wanted to publicly say thank you for your willingness to help me put that together. So it made me look good.
Okay. I'll take a motion.
Move adjournment.
Second. Motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.